And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a lot of Windows Phone 7 goodness in store for you.
A lot of cool stuff coming on Windows Phone side, yeah.
That's right.
A little bit of Unity, a little bit of MVC, a little web action, web services.
You done?
Yeah.
Okay, let's dive right in. So I've been writing these phone apps with my Visual Studio emulator, right?
Yeah. Does it work on J-Sharp?
I haven't written my app yet, but you have. You've been writing apps that you can run in the emulator, mm-hmm. and then you take the apps from the emulator and you try to run them the actual hardware, and boom, you've got a performance hit because the emulator basically is clocked at speed of your PC, and you put it on the phone, and the phone, of course, doesn't have the same CPU and GPU. So what is this here?
So this is how to build kind of best practices. It is obviously the first version of their document, but it's a white paper mm-hmm. and a bunch of samples that you can do and kind of understand what things to look at for performance characteristics, including there was a great session at Mix that we had talked about, you know, around Mix on performance. This is sort of the next version in terms of best practices and things going on there. So people that are building a WinPhone app should definitely look at this. And even other things that a lot of people have questions about. What media types are going to be supported? So in terms of encoding, I have Channel 9 videos. Are they going to be able to play? You get to see the list of profiles that are actually supported on the device.
Got it. So you have some experience with performance tuning the app because you wrote one for Mix, right? It was the T-shirt cannon.
Yeah, we did it again for TechEd, yeah.
Got it. So would you say that performance tuning a Windows Phone 7 app, is that something you can do after the fact, or should you know this stuff going into the app?
God, it really depends. Because if you do a lot of things that are bad, mm-hmm. then you're going to get hosed. And it all kind of adds up,
problem.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So I would probably read this and understand it and then worry, just know the big gotchas or ways to sort of save performance. And really, it's all about trying your application.
Yeah.
Now, I do think there needs to be better profiling tools, and the team knows this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of like a must-have first document to go through and just kind of remember, like, ooh, if I just do this, I'll get better performance.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So these are some Windows Phone samples. And these were from a company that originally wrote these same applets, if you will, for the iPhone, and they converted these over to Windows Phone 7. So they can show you some really basic stuff like top ones, like how many minutes to midnight. That's like a great Hello World first app. Then the other one, of course, is a candle. So you've got to have your canonical
nice little
like,
animation
thing.
Yeah.
Nice and romantic. Now I just need to get like 20 Windows phones. And, yeah.
That is a great idea, actually,
cool.
for
yeah.
like
for,
a nerd,
for my seance.
Nerd Valentine's Day. Okay. Yeah, we'll go with that one. Seance. I conjure the ghosts of Alan Turing.
No, you don't conjure them. You knew them up.
and tasks. So all the tasks and pickers, like a contact picker, all that good stuff.
That's right.
So check it out. And it's tutorials as well, how to use it.
Exactly. So setting up charting controls in Windows Phone 7. So this is
talked about this last week.
David Anson, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, talked about this last week. This was a series of charting controls. And basically what you can do is to make it easier to reuse is to basically define a resource dictionary and have your charting tools use that resource dictionary. So that way it does things like things that don't display that great on a phone. Gradients, for example, or things that you want to use predefined Windows Phone styles for. So the Windows Phone foreground brush.
Mm-hmm.
So because you're using that name, if say you change the theme of your phone from the dark to the light
mm-hmm.
theme, then the foreground brush would change to whatever the opposite of that is.
Okay,
right?
So it's like CSS for your phone, right?
Yeah, if you want to call that, you know, sure.
Okay.
Sure, the point is, it just makes it easier to do the UI for charting controls, and really, the charting controls are just so great in mm-hmm. terms of not having to do all the animations and stuff like that I really recommend people use them.
Cool. So this is a preview of the panorama and pivot controls, which are not yet in the SDK. right?
Plan for RTM.
Plan for the actual RTM release. And this really breaks down the difference between Panorama and Pivot, which you and I were having a discussion of. And so Panorama, of course, you know, that's the canonical example there is Zune HD. You keep scrolling to the right, and you've got all of your
It's like a
music
hub
library.
Or a consolidation. This is all stuff for music, right?
Yeah, like a panorama, if you will.
Yeah.
And and so the Pivot, though, Pivot, when you look
and
at
let's
this
just,
example...
just jump into that. That could be like playing my music. It could be buying new music. It could be like it could be a jumping off point, like a portal. Or like a panorama,
or
of all that stuff, so,
or like email, calendar, tasks. Like if you're looking at an Office application, right?
Yeah. Okay. Jumping off point. Sure. And then within there, you have a pivot, and think of pivot as a way to basically jump between different views of data or relations within there. So the Outlook example, Outlook would jump up, and it's all email. Or all inbox, and then you pivot to the right, and it just changes to the unread. Then you pivot again, and it's just attachments. Pivot again, and it's just high
flagged
importance.
Items, whatever.
Right, exactly. And then you pivot again, and it's like the settings for the application. So it's like different application views or pages.
Got it.
So this goes through the data model, how to use them, and a lot of stuff within there. So,
got it.
Jeff Wilcox has a nice post on this.
Okay, cool. So tilt shift content control. So one of the things
another
you can
Jeff
do,
Wilcox post. Yeah.
Yep. So one of the things you can do in Windows Phone is you've got a list, right? And you select one of the items in the list, and it tabs over, so you can see, or it shifts over.
Yeah, that kind of like just New Orleans right there is selected, so it kind of just moves in, tabs in. Yeah.
What kind of list would have Forks, Washington, New Orleans, and Dayton, Ohio? Places you would find vampires.
What are? We need Hanselman.
Yeah.
What are?
So anyway, this way, you know, you don't have to write your own. It's available. Take advantage of it.
Okay.
All right. Let's do it. So switching gears. So this is but something you might do on Windows Phone device, and that is transferring large amounts of data via a web service. So the default data...
Yeah,
limit.
So like imagine I want to upload...
Pictures.
I want to upload a video.
Video.
Yeah, let's upload a video. So we take a video, maybe our application has an isolated storage, something, right? Mm-hmm. I now need to put it to the cloud. But what happens if the default size is, I think it's, you know, integer 65, 536, whatever right. the value is. This is how you change and do the configuration such that you can support larger sizes.
On ASP.NET web services.
Right.
Right. Got it.
Right.
Okay, so something to file away. Good to have. So SQL Cop is actually one of those hidden news items. We didn't intentionally hide it.
Yeah, last week we put it in the news and then forgot to do a slide on it.
That's right. So what is SQL Cop?
Incompetence.
Don't look at me, man.
Yeah, exactly. The incompetence wheel stops on Dan.
Yes. So SQL Cop, FX Cop. But for your SQL? Right?
Yeah, I think it's that's the best way to explain it. So, I mean, there's so much stuff, like whether you're using data types, whether we obviously have a couple different examples, but fragmented indexes, just a number of things that you may want that could be potential issues with your database.
Right, and you can get a lot of this stuff, too, with the Visual Studio database projects, the old DataDude, Database Edition for software. The old
Ultimate.
Long name. Now it's included in VS Premium. You can run that against your TLSQL as well, or T-SQL as well, and it will come back and tell you, hey, instead of doing a select star, you should actually do a select and then list out all the columns because that's more performant and more robust in case the schema changes later on. And then you can also perform that refactoring right there as well. So you can say expand the wildcard, it'll copy out all the columns for you and change your select statement right there on the fly. So both sets of tools are good to run against your SQL.
Yeah, this one's free. And there's a lot of cool stuff within here. So I definitely check it out and add it to the tool belt.
To the tool belt?
Tool belt?
Toolbox?
Tool belt.
Okay, sure. Just going to carry that around with me.
Toolbox.
Unity container.
Are you looking at my crack? Okay.
In ASP.NET MVC.
We talked about Unity before. This is one of the tools for patterns and practices that allows for better testability by, say, instead of actually loading very specific objects, I now use interfaces and have my objects inherit from that interface, so that way I can have a production system and, say, a test mock object, And when I'm in the test world, I load the test data. When I'm in the production, I at runtime can decide to load which one of those to run, and everything's sort of built around testability. Point is, this shows you how to use the Unity container and ASP.NET MVC.
Okay, that's awesome. I'm all about testability.
Yeah.
So HTML5 IntelliSense in Visual Studio. So this is, I forgot this guy's name, but he basically goes through and finds that someone wrote an XSD file, which is the definition that Visual Studio uses to
XML
understand.
XML schema definition?
Right.
So it's not just Visual Studio. I mean, XML schema definitions are used for to basically say this is what you can and can't do within a specific XML document.
Oh,
it's
sure.
The
That's
rules.
True. That's true. That's the rules.
Or so, the schema.
And you can load that up then in Visual Studio 2010 and then get HTML5 IntelliSense.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, this has been in the product since, you know, the Ken Levy days in terms of XML, and people can use this for all sorts of XML and get great IntelliSense support. So we actually did it for Lua Studio, the Warcraft add-on studio project, to get frame XML IntelliSense. So because Blizzard, the company that builds World of Warcraft, supplies an XSD, we can basically say whenever you see an XML file, assume it's apply this XSD, so that way you do you know, control space, and I now get what are the valid XML values within a frame XML file.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool. I saw Ken Levy last week, actually.
Oh, yeah? How's it doing?
Yeah, it's doing all right.
Okay, it's not like we're live or anything.
Yeah, no. how you doing? How the kids?
Yeah, good.
So another Phil Hack classic here. So versioning with optional arguments.
So optional arguments is something that a lot of people were looking for to avoid the pain of doing Office interop with C#. So where you'd have to pass in like null, or all these fake objects to just make a call. The challenge with that is that causes issues with versioning, where how am I going to be able to look through? And Phil does a great job of actually doing like how the compiler looks for how to do a lookup. So, and some of the different rules that you have for overloads. Like, hey, I don't really know which version of the overload I'm supposed to use. Mm-hmm. It'll throw an error, and it'll tell you why it's throwing that error. And then how you can actually design around this by having, like, required parameters as opposed to optional parameters.
Got it. So where's versioning come into play here?
So, like, let's say, for example, I ship something that has string, and I need to now add, say, a new param. If the compiler can't figure out what I mean by that, let's say maybe one of those is going to be a new, I'm basically doing a new overload or something. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be able to tell the difference between just the new one and the old one. Again, I'll probably have to show you in terms of when you look at it, but basically it doesn't know, it's ambiguous in terms of, hey, I just defined a new item, but in here you define this as an optional parameter, and there really is no difference in terms of the lookup. Hmm. So,
okay, gotcha. Well, probably have to look at those examples then.
Yes.
So we talked about Light Switch last week. Was it last week at VS Live?
I think it was last week.
Yeah.
Everything's a blur.
Yeah, everything is a blur. And so a lot of people have been asking for more details. And so Beth Massey sat down with Joe Binder and really took us in a more in-depth tour of what's going on with Visual Studio Light Switch. So this is similar to your interview with
G. Schmelzer.
Thank you.
But this one actually has smart people and depth.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of cool stuff here.
No offense, Jay. We're Dan's
actually, I
talking
was
about himself
putting
there.
On myself.
Yeah. So, picks of the week. So, my pick of the week, you know, a few weeks ago, I talked about the TFS and project server integration that we had.
And you just did a blog post.
And I just did a blog post on it because I sat down and tried to go through the customer experience of downloading this thing, and it is like 26 files that you have to click download, and it's just terrible. So, I wrote up a blog post that makes it really easy to take all the links you need, copy and paste those into a download manager. And we just spun up an early adopter program as well. So if you're interested in learning more about that, engaging with us on early adopter trainings and working directly with the engineering team to help give us your feedback, your requirements, so we can make sure we ship a really great integration, I've got a link in my blog post that you can use to sign up for that program, and we'd love to work with you.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's it. What's your pick of the week?
Mine is René Schulte. I hope I'm getting his name right, because he even sent us the sound file. New Coding for Fun app that we've actually played it and loaded it on one of our test phones.
Nice.
So it's called PicFX. And so what it basically does is you grab a picture. It's either one that's in your already saved images, or you basically turn it, does the camera capture task. I have the camera capture, does a writable bitmap, and then can change and do things like bit shift to add a cool sepia effect, black and white effect, and a bunch of other effects. So he goes through actually the code to do these, and basically everything follows one effect, and then there's different implementations for the effects. He's got another part series coming on some of the different effects coming, but I think this is going to be really cool. I think everybody kind of likes these, and the sepia effect looks awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Can you stitch photos together with this, or
no?
Okay,
no. This is really to take an image and then apply a specific effect to it.
Okay, cool.
So, okay.
All right.
I think we're done.
See you next week.
Thanks.